Good evening. How are you? Pleasure.
All right, good evening. Welcome once again to the El Rey.
Who the fuck are you?
We're gonna rock and roll tonight, aren't we, mister? Okay, on behalf of K-Rock, I'd like to welcome all of you here. Come on, you saw this coming. You saw the van out front. Quit being a bunch of pussies. You know we own you. And as a matter of fact, that's why you're here tonight, because of K-Rock. So shut the fuck up. That's right. And you know what? Peyton will be on in a minute or two. But first, I want to tell you about some upcoming sponsored K-Rock. All right, we got a little life here tonight. And I want each and every one of you to stop by the truck on your way out. And sign up for our mailing list, because we could turn you on to some really good music. Like Pavement, who we are responsible for turning you on to tonight, I would like to remind you. So, do you want to hear about the other concerts that we have coming up? They might be as cool as this one. I see an awful lot of you suckers here tonight. Call and response, baby. Call and response. It's an old blues trick. I learned it at the House of Blues. Yeah, K-Rock does some shows there, too. Oh, they're good ones. I hope we'll see you there sometime real soon. Okay, so anyway, here's a band that 7-8 years ago none of you had ever heard of. Until we started the trend. K-Rock rides again, I think. Rides off into the sunset with your cash, your hard-earned money. That's right. And these guys, shut up, boy. You're here on my tab. These guys are personal friends of mine, and I got their autographs on all my Pavement records. 5 minutes ago, what do you guys have? You don't even have any cups anymore. Okay. Shut up. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the band that makes you cool. The band you came here tonight to say. Okay, we got some upcoming events I'd like to tell you about.
Nina, may I have the copy of Pravda?
But darling, I am doing the puzzle.
What is the puzzle this week?
The same one as always. What happened to Molotov? Nikita, why can't we have another party?
I told you why. We cannot have another party because in this country there is only one party.
I would think that since you are the boss, we could change that.
If I change that, I would no longer be the boss. So, no party, understand?
Very well. Why don't we go and see a movie?
Maybe you have the paper. Look it up and see what's playing.
Let me see. The Pushkin Theater is showing How to Run a Wheat Harvester. And the Mendeleev has a double feature. Why the Potato Crop Failed, playing with Who Pulled the Vodka in the Volga.
Nah, I don't like mysteries.
Go to the stadium and watch the chess matches.
No, it makes you too excited. Remember what you did last time we went.
What about we go to the Black Sea for the weekend?
No, the weather report said that the blizzards and the snowdrifts will continue down there all week.
My, they're certainly having poor weather there this season.
Yes, all of the resort owners are complaining. They say this is the worst summer they ever had.
But they say that every year.
Yes, they do.
How about we call up Mikoyan? He's always got people over his house. Maybe he'll invite us over.
I sent Mikoyan to Cuba.
What about calling up Malenka? He's always...
You forgot I sent him somewhere else. Years ago.
Yes, that's right. What about Mao Zedong?
No, it's too much trouble calling him up because 20 minutes later you have to call him up again.
What about Zhukov?
Yeah, Zhukov is very busy. Remember I told you that he was assigned to produce big propaganda picture about how we Soviet people invented the telephone?
Yes.
Well, the entire production schedule has gone behind because Don Amici refuses to be in the film.
So, what you going to do?
What else? They are busy inventing Don Amici.
All right, Ricky. How about sending out for a pizza?
That would probably be cold by the time we got it because the nearest place you can get one is Israel. Besides, today is Saturday and Israel is closed.
So, what will we do tonight?
We will do what we always do. We will sit here and wonder what to do. Hand me the cup, Lev Pravda.
I told you, I'm trying to figure out the puzzle. Maybe you want to help me to do it.
No, I have to disqualify myself from doing that puzzle. It would be poor sportsmanship if I helped you with it. You see, I know what happened to Molotov.
A date with danger. A play-safe educational film. Presented in cooperation with your local school board. Now, Dr. Ernest Ranchman, M.D.
Hello, boys and girls, and parents and teachers who use them. You know, one does not always know what one is letting oneself in for when one entertains a member of one's opposite sex. As illustrated by the old fable of the pig and the poke, I know from experience that children these days have problems just like real people. Grown-ups understand this, and youngsters sometimes get confused by strange and disgusting urges, which are a normal part of growing up. But if these problems are handled by the child with intelligence and frequent hip baths, then there will be no necessity for expensive and humiliating medical treatment later on in life. Take the case of little Gary Brewster. Let me put that another way. Take the example of little Gary Brewster. He's captain of the football team, lieutenant of the debating squad, and sergeant-at-arms for the Cashmere Sweater Club. Let's join Gary, won't we? He's at the Hamilton High Sock Hop.
Girly Burberry, sure is a swell dance, huh?
Yeah, Gary. It's all Reed, Gary.
Thanks, Burberry. You're okay, too. So okay that sometimes it's hard to express my emotions in words, you know?
I know.
Gary, let me talk to you for a moment.
I can't now, Spike. I got my arm around my girlfriend, Barbara.
Let her rest, Eddie-O. This is important, man.
It's all right, Gary. I'll go help with the punch.
Well, okay. I'll see you a little later, Barbara.
Hey, Gary, man. Stinky and I want to let you in on something groovy.
Yeah, go ahead, Spike. Tell him.
We got bubbles in the parking lot.
Well, why don't you take a seltzer product?
Man, are you from Squaresville? Hey, Stinky, can you believe that? Tell our oblong friend about bubbles.
She's fast. She's loose. She puts out. She pulls in.
Stinky, tell him the good part.
Oh, yeah. She goes all the way.
Oh, I don't know. I'm in love with Barbara, and besides, I might get a venereal disease, and it could ruin my chances.
Oh, I dated Bubbles 100 times, and look at me.
What's the matter, man? You chicken?
Chicky, chicky, cock-a-doodle-doo!
Hey, wait a second. I am not chicken to do anything.
Well, why don't you go out and see Bubbles?
Well, because nobody's dared me.
We dare you.
All right, take me to her. But I have to get back here to take Barbara home.
Don't worry, man. Everything will be the coolest.
Yeah.
young Gary yielded to temptation in the back seat of a blue sedan and lost a part of his youth that he can never get back, as well as $5 he won't see again. What did he gain from this? A sick heart, a heavy conscience, and the nickname Tiny. The seed of Satan had given bloom to the lotus of lust. Later on that same evening...
Well, Barbara, I guess this is good night.
Yeah, Gary. There's just one thing. Something happened at the dance, didn't it?
Well...
You were with Bubbles, weren't you?
I...
Joanne said she saw you in the parking lot, didn't she?
No, Barbara. Don't jump to any tasty conclusions. You're my girl.
Gary, when we fell in love, do you remember that we signed that agreement that we would never lie to each other?
Sure, I remember it. What about it?
Well, I don't think you're telling the truth about Bubbles.
All right, I was with Bubbles. But it was different. It felt good, but it was ugly. It was kind of fun, but it was so ugly. I'm sure it was exciting. Well, maybe it wasn't that ugly.
Gary, have you ever thought about me that way?
Of course not, Barbara. You're ugly. And besides, I love you. Except sometimes I wonder if you're only just a child.
Just a child? Why, I'm a woman, I bet.
Well, we'll talk about it in the morning. I am tired.
Gary?
Yeah?
If I have to do this to keep you from leaving me... All right, take me!
I had known Gary Brewster and Barbara Blake ever since they were very short. I had been their family doctor. Imagine my surprise when they walked into my office 2 months later in a very agitated state.
Hello, doctor.
Hello, doctor.
Well, Barbara and Gary, to what do I owe this suspected surprise?
Well, doctor, here's what happened. We... The stove. And that's the whole story.
Well, I won't beat around your bush. You felt you were old enough to do what you did, so you're old enough to face the consequences. Was it fun?
No, not really.
We lost respect for each other.
Yep.
Well, what I have to tell you won't be easy. You both have venereal disease and will have to undergo painful treatment. And I must warn you that you may die.
Oh.
And even if you don't, you could live like lepers the rest of your life.
Thank you, doctor.
I didn't know that.
I wish I had.
I hope what you have just seen has made you a smarter, more frightened person. Venereal disease is no joke, because it is not a laughing matter. To prove my point, you'll notice on my desk a large pickle jar, inside of which floats the remains of a 14-year-old girl who contracted venereal disease and shriveled away to the dead form on my desk. Look at it, boys and girls. Don't close your eyes. And remember, it is a stronger person who can say no to temptation than the one who says yes to temptation.
Well, Jerry, our next famous fall guy is still putting his art in cans from Canada to Kashmir. Winner of the Academy's coveted Good Sport Award in 1956 for Excellence in Hollywood, meet George LeRoy Tirebiter.
Hubba, hubba, George. What a suit. Well, it's nice to see you looking like you're back on your feet again, George, and ready to play our little game again.
Thank you very much.
George, first a tip for our viewers, maybe. How does an old man like you stay alive?
Well, sir, I try to get up every morning and watch television all day, Mr. Yellow.
Do you have a special diet, George?
I don't eat.
You don't eat?
No, but it hasn't affected my appetite.
Well, George...
you don't have any little throat clusters I can chew on, maybe, do you?
Later, George. You won't want to eat in a minute after you turn your back and get ready for this stab from the past.
Oh, my.
All right, George. Now, you remember all those lovable, stupid, Porgy and Mudhead movies you were responsible for?
My goodness, I haven't seen any of those in
years.
Well,
Georgie, what are you going to do when the original Bottles, Mudhead's crazy hopped-up girlfriend, drops right through that celebrity trap door?
Oh, no, that woman's trying to kill me.
Let's talk about your car. It's screaming, wash me, please. Now, if you're a Mr. Common Sense, you won't believe me when I tell you that I've got an envelope that'll clean your car while you're driving at home to work. Well, George, believe me, this time, because this one isn't like the Austrian self-sharpening razors. No, friends, no overheating like with the tropical fishes. No zizzing and dripping like with the dike.
I don't want it anymore, Dr. Gunderson.
Don't want what, child?
My coffee. The warden says he's tired of my coffee.
Well, it's been pretty clear that your coffee don't got zest appeal.
Zest appeal? What's that?
I don't know.
Oh.
That's the secret ingredient in Herzog Brothers coffee. Yeah, look here.
Huh?
A blend of the finest Brazilian soya beans, Chilean chicory nuts, and Spanish flies.
Oh.
Here, take this can home with you, Katie.
The next morning...
More coffee, Warden.
Oh, I think I've had enough.
Herzog Brothers coffee, the real one. Look for the can in the plain brown can.
I'd in any way want to put myself into a confrontatory position, either with the United Snakes or with them. And you can believe me, because I never lie, and I'm always right. So wake up and take a look at your only logical choice. Me, George Tirebiter.
Paid for by the Tirebiter for Political Solutions Committee, Sector R.
This is you, TV. For you, the viewer. The Howl of the Wolf movie. Presenting honest stories of working people as told by rich Hollywood stars.
This morning's wacky feature, Porgy and Mudhead in High School Madness, with Dave Kasman as Porgy and Joe Bertman as Mudhead.
He's a spy and a girl delighter. Porgy, firefighter, he's a student like you. If you're looking for a captain of the ring ball team, you can bet he won't be there. You'll find him popping up at Pop's Sodium Shop to trim a red with red hair. Doobie-doo-wa, Porgy, firefighter. Just a student like you.
Like me?
Just a student like you.
Stop singing and finish your homework.
Just a student like you.
Adolf, come and get it. Your clam cakes are getting damp.
10-4, Eleanor.
Whew! Defoliating a victory garden certainly works up an appetite.
You sit down, Father, and dig right in.
That's right. This afternoon, I'll be able to start digging the pit. If I can get some work out of that boy of yours, I can have the bunker finished by election day. Where is Porgy, anyway?
He's up in his room, helping Porcelain make the bed.
Oh, Porgy! Oh, my!
Porgy! Porgy, tell you about it!
You're coming, Mother!
He's so good with the servants, Fred.
Stop calling me Fred. My name's Adolf.
Oh, bombs away, Dad. Morning, Mom.
Morning, sir.
Oh, hot dog! Groat cakes again. Heavy on the 30-weight, Mom.
Don't eat with your hands, son. Use your entrenching tool.
Aw, gee, Dad, I'm just trying to save time. It isn't every day a guy graduates from high school.
How many times have I heard that before?
Well, you boys fight it out among yourselves.
Okay, Mother.
Look at the time. I've got to dress for my bridge club.
Gee, Mom, isn't that bridge built yet?
No, son.
And it won't be until free hands on both sides of the big ditch can press the same button at the same time.
Okay, Dad, I give. Oh, boy, can I eat my breakfast now?
Only if you stay out of trouble, boy. Your shenanigans could cost me this election.
Well, come on, Dad. No Irishman can stop you from getting to be dog killer this time. You're a natural.
Don't wolf your food.
Oh, there's Mudhead. Graduation, here I come.
So long, Dad. Keep flying.
Oh, that son of mine.
He's not your son, Fred.
Stop torturing me, Ethel.
Time once again for Mr. Question Man. All of the questions sent to Mr. Question Man are carefully tabulated in files. Some of them are read. Our first question comes from Mr. Arthur B. Kosnowski of Macon, Indiana. Arthur B. Kosnowski of Macon, Indiana writes, Dear Mr. Question Man, I am writing to you from inside a burning warehouse. Let me take a moment of your time to go back a bit. I bought this house 11 years ago in November. No, I believe it was February. Well, when I bought it, they told me that it was fireproof. By the way, please pardon the condition of this stationery. Well, at about 11 o'clock tonight, a fire broke out in the southern wing of the warehouse. It spread rapidly, and at this writing, I would say 96% of the warehouse is in flames. There goes another wall. I'm standing on the last 2 feet of flooring in the north wing, and I'd say that this will only last, 3 minutes. Perhaps two with a good wind. I really am at a loss to know what to do. And while I do not mean to press you, I would appreciate an answer at your earliest convenience. Best regards to you and Mrs. Question Man, Arthur Kosnowski.
I am afraid that in the present day hurly-burly of rapid transactions, we sometimes put insufficient trust in those with whom we do business. Your real estate agent was telling the truth. By law, all warehouses in Macon, Indiana must be fireproof, so you have no cause for alarm. While I do not mean to appear severe, I am forced to say I feel a certain embarrassment for you and your attitude toward the real estate agent. Should you manage to survive for another moment or two, you might take the time to drop him a social note without mentioning your suspicions. I think that'd be awfully nice. At any rate, good to hear from one of our listeners in Indiana.
A young student from Hightstown, New Jersey writes, Dear Mr. Question Man, I am studying science in high school. I am quite puzzled by this phenomenon. It is well known that the earth is round like a ball. Therefore, some people must be walking on it upside down. Why is it that these people do not fall off?
You have stated a common misconception. People are falling off all the time.
Trader Rogers of Upper Gum, South Africa writes, 1 year ago, I married Kino, the daughter of the cannibal chief of these parts. Living here has been rather confusing as they have different dates for holidays that I have been accustomed to. For instance, last week, the cannibals celebrated Easter. Next week, we're going to observe Thanksgiving. A point of etiquette has arisen. Kino's father, the chief, has suggested that we have the local missionary for Thanksgiving. Is this considered proper in the United States?
No, we're still eating turkey here.
Chief Bardoni El Swahili of the Wambisi tribe in Equatorial South Africa has written an interesting letter. Dwanya Nagi Hagu, Inga Green Lakabandi, Lawana Tiganadu, Kabi Dig Navas Bonta, Motoloni Argu Diban,
Genda Ranyo Boro Dobilaka.
Although I was at the library today, the guy's very rude. I said, I like a card. He says, you have to prove you're a citizen of New York. So I stabbed him. Well, I was mad, you know. Once I went to the library, I said, I like a book on the Heimlich anti-choking maneuver. The guy said, look at the card catalog, I'm busy. So I go to the card catalog, I look under Heimlich and choking and maneuver. It's not in any of those places. And I see this first aid book with this section, and I take it, and the guy said, it's a reference book. You can't take it off. You have to Xerox. And I said, do you have a change for a dollar? He said, it's not a bank. It's a library. So I go to this souvenir stand, and I said, do you have change for a dollar? They said, it's not a bank, it's a souvenir stand. So I go to this bank, and they said, yes, this is a bank. And they give me the change, and I come back to the, this time there's a line of students Xeroxing their books or whatever, and I Xerox the Heimlich. As I go back, the guy says, put it back now that you've used it. So I put it back, and as I leave, he says, thank you. I said, well, thank you. I'm never coming to this barn again. And I went back to my car. Now, by this time, my sister's almost purple from the chicken bone.
Play that I want to tell you about is that Romeo and Juliet. Now, there is a real thing. It's a story about how this boy and girl was in love of one another, don't you see? It is. And everything would have been all right for them, except that their daddies didn't get along. They didn't. And when the play opens, Juliet's daddy is throwing this big fancy dress ball, and he invited the whole town to be there, but he didn't invite none of Romeo's people to come. And his buddies learnt of it. And they put him up to slipping on a costume and slipping in at this party. And he was a spunky kind of a boy, and he done it. I think. He done it, and he got in there, and everything was going good, till all of a sudden this girl, Juliet, come down the stairs. And he was so struck by her that he give a soliloquy right there. He did. And it wasn't about being or not being. It was about doing or not doing. Well, the do's, they won out over the don'ts. And so what he done, he got her by the hand and started to take her out in the yard. And we'll never know what it was that there's going to do out there. We won't, because this fella Tybalt recognized Romeo for who he was and come up on him a-trying to pick a fight. But Juliet's daddy, he didn't want no bloodshed right there in his living room. He didn't. So all he done, he run Romeo off. But Romeo didn't go straight home. No, he didn't. He went out and hid in the yard till everybody left the party. And then when they had all went, he popped up and looked around. And he seen this light come on away off yonder. And he says to himself, he says, hark. He says, what light by yonder window shines? He did. And let me tell you, Juliet stepped out of her bedroom window onto this stoop. And she give a soliloquy. She did, friends, and somewhere in it, she says, Romeo, Romeo. She says, wherefore art thou, Romeo? And he popped up and says, I'm right here. I thank you. Well, as it happened, there was this great big pea vine growing up to where she is a standing. And so he clumb up it. He clumb up it, and that is where they had that balcony scene. And they hadn't been there but just a few minutes till he asked her to marry him. And that shows that he was an honorable boy about it all. Well, she says, when? And he's... Well, he says, now, and that shows that he wasn't up there for no light courting. He wanted to get on with it. back then, the reason everybody lived in castles was that there were so many of them to put up at nights. Well, there were so many of them died that they had to keep a preacher on duty day and night. Fella Friar Lawrence was his name. And so Romeo and Juliet, they went downstairs and woke him up and told him what it was that they wanted to do, and he thought that was all right. So he married them right there. But then, don't you see, it was a question of where they was to spend the night, things being how they was and all. And Friar Lawrence told Romeo that he ought to go on home that night. And Romeo, he didn't take to it too hot. He didn't, but he did. He went on home that night, and then Romeo thought that he better go off and lay low till things cooled off. And while he is gone, friends, Juliet's mama took a great notion that Juliet ought to get married. And then she was in a bind. She was. Because she didn't want two husbands, because she figured that Romeo would be enough to take care of by himself. And so she went back down to Friar Lawrence to see what she ought to do. And he mixed her up a drink, and she drunk it, and she fell out across the bed there, and everybody thought she is dead. And they had this big, pretty funeral, and laid her out in this family tomb and all. And before that Friar Lawrence could get word to Romeo that she wasn't really dead, some of them mean boys that lived in that town told him that she was dead. And he figured life didn't hold nothing for him. So he went out and got him this big can of lye to drink. So he went over to this tomb where it was she was laid out, and he opened the door of it, and he says, "Oh, my love, oh, my wife." He did. And he went in, and he drunk the lye and kissed her and says, "With this kiss, I die." And he fell out across to there. And he was a big boy for his age. He was. And the impact of him, a falling on her, woke her up. And she woke up, didn't know what was going on, and she looked there and seen Romeo a-laying dead. And then she figured life didn't hold nothing for her. And then she took his knife and run it into herself, and she expired. She did, friends. And the moral of it is, if you've got a boy that courts a girl that you don't like, or the other way around, if you don't want the expense of a double funeral on you, the best thing for you to do is to let them have a cheap wedding.
Okay, I'm the first who would say to you, I am not in any way deserving of such a warm welcome this evening, especially after what I did to you guys last week. Hey, imagine anything so depressing? Anyway, tonight we're going to try and make up for that. We're in it for laughs tonight. Hope you brought your funny bone, or can get a hold of it easily enough, and tonight we have a bunch of chuckles for you, because I'm tired of crying. I really am. You know, it's just, this is not the day, the times to be happy and stuff, but we have to try, don't we? So in that vein, I started you out with kind of a threatening piece. That was K-Rock Introduces Pavement. I don't think it's happened. I don't think it was real. I kind of really hope it was, but I just think it's a put on. So, but I thought it was kind of funny, right? Another Saturday night after that was The Other Family. That was an album that came out in the stampede after Vaughn Meader's First Family. This is about The Other Family in Russia, Nikita the K, from 1962. Included performances by people like Buck Henry and Joan Rivers and George Siegel and probably a whole bunch of others. I just don't know. I have the album here in the house somewhere. I'm betting it's in a box in the basement like most of my others. I need a turntable. If you're getting rid of any, let me know. Anyway, we also heard from the Credibility Cap from their first album, which was a double LP thing called Makes a Great Gift. two entire sides of those discs were related to them doing the Rose Parade, riffing on the Rose Parade one New Year's morning. I'm sure they were pretty hungover. But I want to find that whole thing, but I haven't so far. It's about an hour and a half long. Fireside Theater, High School Madness, part of that. The opening to Howl of the Wolf movie. Mr. Question Man was, of course, Ernie Kovacs. You remember him, of course. You can't forget Ernie Kovacs. Emo Phillips after that. A guy named Phil Sultanic from Chicago. That was the library. If you've ever seen Emo Phillips do his shtick, it's startling. Everybody's got a gimmick, and his is one too. And I think he does pretty good at it. But I don't know. If you want to see him, and I understand he's gone back to his character, he's not hiding in plain sight anymore. He'll be on tour with Weird Al this summer, all over the country except in Maine, of course. Andy Griffith after that, Romeo and Juliet, kind of in the spirit of his what it was football. This time, what it was Romeo and Juliet, right? And they were in love of one another, as we well know. So, all right, so I got a bunch more for you here. Please don't step on the wiggling things on the floor, okay? We just can't keep track of them, so enjoy.
Going down emergency here.
Oh my god, it's swamped, man. We must have every basket case in the world here tonight.
Saturday night, man.
Yeah, we really pack them in here. Yeah. How's everything at the morgue?
Pretty dead, man.
Yeah, so was that joke, man. That was last year's.
Talk about dead. Look at that old bugger coming in the door here.
Yeah, he's almost dead. It looks like 110 if he's a day.
You having a heart attack, man?
No, it's, it looks like that.
That's a heart attack. You can tell by the way he's clutching his heart. Look at the color.
No, he's wheezing too much for it to be a heart attack.
Listen,
no,
that's like cardiac arrest, I know, man. No, that's a heart attack. You can tell. Look at him.
No, he's having an asthma attack.
Look, he's going to drop dead any minute, man. So don't tell
he'll
me that's a heart
here.
Attack.
He'll make it over.
He ain't going to make it to the desk,
yeah,
man.
You
want to
bet?
Forget that. I'll bet you.
Okay, what do you want to bet?
Coffee.
All right, you're on.
Okay.
Come on, man. Come on, you can do it.
Forget it.
Okay,
don't touch him. If
he's
touching the bed,
no, I'm not going to touch him.
He's got to touch the desk.
He'll touch the desk. Come on. One more. Come on. You can. Lunge out. One more. He did it. Hey, you owe me coffee.
All right. I'll pay you later. Okay, I got to split.
Okay, take it easy. Oh, come on. Step up just a little bit farther. That's good. Okay, now take Form A in your hand. This is Form A. Hold it, please. There you go. Okay, now take this pencil. Don't lose it. This is your pencil. They want you to take the pencil and fill out the form. Now, I want you to include your first name last, your last name first, and your middle initial at the end, okay? Then we want to list all your insurance benefits and your blood type. Now, very important, we want you to include the name of your next of kin because we want to be able to notify somebody in an emergency. Sometimes those things happen, okay? So now take this number here. This is your number. It's number 146. When you hear this number called, just go with the nurse and she'll take care of you, okay? Okay, have a seat over there in that gray chair. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now serving number 7. Number 7, please step forward.
Yeah, man. I'm number 7, man.
Yeah, you're number 7. Do you have your card?
No, I lost it.
Yeah. Well, what seems to be the trouble with you?
Listen, man. I'm having trouble with my nerve. I think I've been up 4 days, man.
Yeah, I know. It's really, really wired.
You know, so I'm sick. I got a headache. I need something.
Yeah. What would he suggest we give you?
A couple of reds would be a groove, man.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd like that. I'm sorry we can't give you anything. You want to step aside, please?
Hey, man, don't hand me that crap.
Listen, I'm not.
Hey, now listen, man. A couple of friends of mine got some reds here, man. So don't hand me that
crap.
No,
listen,
man.
We're not authorized. I'm not authorized to hand those out.
Come
only
on
an intern.
Now,
I'm not a doctor.
That crap, man.
I don't make the rules.
Like,
I just
what
carry
like
them out. No, hold on.
No, you don't know what it's like, man. I'm wired, man.
Come on, calm down. Calm down. Don't start crying. You're drawing a crowd. Come on, now. Just calm down. Quiet now.
I need something, man.
All right, here, I'll give you something. Here, hold out your hand. Come on, there. All right. Here, there's one more. Okay. All right. You feel better now? You okay?
Yeah, man. All
right. Okay.
Say, listen, man.
Yeah?
Could you make a couple more on for my old lady, man?
The London Boiler is on the line.
Hey, Heine, Here's some beach that's unoccupied by semi-naked young women in need. Let's sit here.
Great, Lou. Wow, this is hot.
Super hot. Sizzling.
No, Lou. I mean, I'm sweating. How come we're the only guys on the beach wearing corduroy pants and winter jackets?
Ooh, open your eyes, Jaime. Huh? We are virtually surrounded by bikini-clad beach bunnies.
Whoa.
If we were to strip down to swimwear, they'd get a nose full of our pungent male musk, and they'd just go mad!
Really? Couldn't we just wear oversized swimsuits just to keep our male animal parts covered?
If they even saw our rippling ankles, it would be wham, bam, 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 bam. Thank you, Jaime.
But I'm sweating, Lou.
Better a little sweat than 15 lubed-up vixens lining up to ride the Love Stud Express destination convulsions of pleasure.
I guess so. But all this heat makes my head feel, well, it feels like it's going to explode. Ah, my head exploded.
No, Jaime, that girl's frisbee hit you.
Oh, here's your frisbee back, miss. Thanks.
She says thanks. Take me now, sex bronco is more like it.
Really?
Every inch of her body has become a hypersensitive organ of immediate gratification.
Wow, Lou, I never realized my male bliss factory could create such sexual tension.
Sure. Why do you think they call it breaststroke? They wish. Those saucy senoritas are dreaming of our sweaty palms sending their rosebuds off to the rocket's red glare.
What is this power we have over women, Lou?
Well, I mean, technically, it's called super love god macho power. Basically, it drives chicks mad!
Wow, maybe we should get our taut stallion haunches off this beach. Why don't we go lie under the sprinkler in my yard?
Good idea, Jaime. That way the ladies won't be tempted to jump our industrial strength maleness and drain us of every fluid in our bodies. Grab the thermos of RC Cola. Let's go, commandos. It's howling time.
Lou?
Yes, Jaime?
If these chicks here are so hot for us, then how come none of them are even watching us leave?
They're holding it in check, Jaime. They're barely keeping themselves from crazy gluing their loins to ours, using their throbbing thighs as C-clamps.
You mean, if we stay a second longer, they'll go mad!
A guy once said, for every man there's a woman. If that's true, someplace in this world, some guy's walking around with two girls. All my life, I wanted to have a girl for myself. So what happens? I am unattractive because of overweight. So I weigh 220 pounds. So what? I can handle it. I'm 5 feet. So I figure I got to lose weight. So I went to this doctor. So the doctor says, you're lucky to come to me because I got a new method. You take these pills. Whenever you feel hungry, you don't have to eat nothing. Just take a pill. Very simple, huh? So is the doctor. The first week I gained 9 pounds. I ate 7,000 pills. I was starving. Just take a bunch of pills and I chopped them up, made a little pill burger. Pretty soon I was breaking out in little bumps. The pills were popping out of my skin. They're all different color pills. Brown, green, and pink. With the instructions, take a brown an hour before breakfast, the green an hour before lunch, and the pink at 4 o'clock, which was very difficult as I don't get up until 20 to 5. And you got to take the brown pill in the morning before you get out of bed. Because once you get out of bed, you're so hungry from yesterday, you could eat up everything in the whole house. The furniture, the oil cloth, the stove, the maid comes in the morning and she can't find nothing. It's just an empty house there. And you're lying in the room looking very strange with your body protruding at odd angles from the furniture that you devoured. And here's the way the pills work. You take the brown pill. As soon as you take it, your tongue tastes on the roof of your nose, and it stays that way until you take the green one. You take the green one, your jaws clamp together, stay this way until you take the pink one. You take the pink pill, you fall asleep in the morning, you wake up in time to take the brown one again. Do this for 30 days, you lose weight, you have the nicest figure in the whole cemetery, and they bury you in an envelope. And this envelope used to hold the pills.
A lot of people ask me, how do you become a comedian? Well, it's simple, folks. You get a lot of jokes together, you tell them to your friends, you keep the good ones. Now, before you know it, you are a riot. Everybody wants you in the home for parties, weddings, everything. You get free meals, everybody makes a fuss over you. Now, somebody tells you you ought to go on the stage like an idiot, you believe this. Now, to go on the stage, you must learn how to speak clearly. You go to diction school. They fill your mouth with marbles, and you are supposed to talk clearly right through the marbles. Now, every day you lose a marble. When you've lost all your marbles. I just found a labor-saving device. A rich old lady. A drunk walks into an elevator shaft. He falls down 10 flights. He's lying there bleeding. He says, I said, up! You know, a father was explaining ethics to his son, who's about to go into business. He says, suppose a woman comes in and orders $100 worth of material. You wrap it up and you give it to her. Now, she pays you with a $100 bill. As she goes out the door, you realize she's giving you two $100 bills. Now, here's where the ethics come in. Should you or shouldn't you tell your partner? They have a new thing now called Nicotine Anonymous. It's for people who want to stop smoking. When you feel a craving for a cigarette, you simply call up another member. He comes over and you get drunk together. Folks, I got a wonderful doctor. If you can't afford the operation, he touches up the x-rays. My arm hurt. I went to the doctor. I said, Doc, it hurts when I lift my arm like this. He says, don't do that. I said, Doc, it hurts. He pulled out a medical book. He studied 20 minutes. He said, you ever had that pain before? I said, yes. He said, well, he got it again. Incidentally, folks, if any of you people meet me at the racetrack, please don't give me any more tips on horses. I played a horse so slow the jockey kept a diary of the trip. Some people play a horse to win, some to place. They should have bet the horse to live. The jockey hit the horse. The horse turned around. He said, what are you hitting me for? There's nobody behind us. That's the first time I ever saw a horse start from a kneeling position. I don't mind when the horse is left at the post. I don't mind when the horse comes up to me in the grandstand and asks, which way do they go? When I see the horse I bet on it, the $2 winner, playing another horse in the same race. Before I go, folks, I have a message for all you parents. Is your teenage son or daughter out for the evening? If so, take advantage of the opportunity. Pack your furniture, call a moving man, and don't leave a forwarding address. No, I never had a penny to my name, so I changed my name. My wife's always asking for money, complained a friend of ours. Last week she wanted $200. The day before yesterday she asked me for $125. And this morning she wanted $150. He said, that's crazy. What does she do with it all? She said, I don't know. I never give her any. You know Jack the Ripper was never killed. He's doing my laundry. Say, folks, you know what it means to come home at night to a woman who'll give you a little love, a little affection, a little tenderness. It means you're in the wrong house. That's what it means. The fellow walked up to me and said, stick him down. I said, you mean stick him up? He said, no wonder I've made any money. Says a new perfume out which drives women crazy. It smells like money. It's called Filthy Luca 5. Say, I came home last night by accident. There's the car in the dining room. I said to my wife, how did he get the car in here? She said, it was easy. I made a left turn when I came out the kitchen. Said, you hear about the nearsighted snake who fell in love with a piece of rope? Say, my wife put her hand out the window while she was driving. She signaled right, then left, then she erased it. I said, what kind of a signal is that? She said, I want to go right, and I want to go left, and I changed my mind. I rubbed it out.
June 4th, 1973, was much like any other summer's day in Peterborough, and Ralph Mellish, a file clerk at an insurance company, was on his way to work as usual, when nothing happened. Scarcely able to believe his eyes, Ralph Mellish looked down, but one glance confirmed his suspicions. Behind a bush on the side of the road, there was no severed arm, no dismembered trunk of a man in his late 50s, no head in a bag. Nothing. Not a sausage. For Ralph Mellish, this was not to be the start of any trail of events which would not, in no time at all, involve him in neither a tangled knot of suspicion nor any web of lies which would, had he been not uninvolved, surely have led him to no other place than the Central Criminal Court. of the Old Bailey. But it was not to be. Ralph Mellish reached his office in Dalzell Street, Peterborough, at 9.05 a.m. Exactly the same time as he usually got in.
Morning, Mr. Mellish.
Morning, Enid.
Enid, a sharp-eyed, clever young girl who had been with the firm for only 4 weeks, couldn't help noticing the complete absence of tiny but telltale bloodstains on Mr. Mellish's clothing. Nor did she notice anything strange in Mr. Mellish's behaviour that whole morning, nor the next morning, nor at any time before or since the entire period she worked with that firm.
Have the new paper clips arrived, Enid?
Yes, they're over there, Mr. Mellish.
Oh.
But for the lack of any untoward circumstances for this young secretary to notice, and the total non-involvement of Mr. Mellish in anything illegal, the full weight of the law would have ensured that Ralph Aldous Mellish would have ended up, like all who challenge the fundamental laws of our society, in an iron coffin with spikes on the inside.
Turn that thing off! You'll be late for the bus. It's nearly 9:30.
It was indeed nearly 9:30.
Now off you go!
Off I went on a perfectly ordinary kind of day.
May I sit down?
Yes.
I changed my seat because it was too warm.
I always travel with the window open.
It is dangerous to keep a window open. There is always flying smut.
It is not dangerous if you keep your elbows inside.
What did you say?
Elbows.
Elbows.
E-L-B-O-W-S.
Then you was a grubby woman.
That's right. You was a fat man?
Yeah.
Listen. The squat man is dead.
What?
He died in Newport.
But I had a letter from the bald lady only yesterday.
It couldn't be helped. Do you have it?
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Listen very carefully. Smile. Thank you, conductor.
I don't trust the conductor. He's very short.
Listen, we have very little time. In one moment, we will come to the Norwalk Tunnel.
Yeah.
It will be dark for 1¾ seconds.
Yeah. Careful. The conductor is coming back.
Listen. When we go through the tunnel...
Yeah.
Reach down the back of my collar over my clavicle. There is a ticket.
Yeah.
Take it quickly.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming to the tunnel.
Yeah.
Shut up, you fool! You want to ruin everything!
Do you have it?
Yeah.
All right. Listen very closely.
Yeah.
When you go...
Yeah.
Tell them I asked for no starch...
No starch?
...in the collar.
No.
No starch.
It's impossible. It can't be done.
It must be done.
What about the cuffs?
Never mind the cuffs, fool.
But I have to specify.
No starch in the collar. Smile.
Why is he so short?
Don't worry, he gets off the train at Bridgeport.
Then he's one of us?
Yeah.
I should have known.
Do you understand everything now?
Yeah. No starch in the cuffs.
Right.
No starch in the collar. Listen.
Yeah.
What about the spot?
The train will stop at Westport. Someone is supposed to get on. Do you know about it?
A good humor man.
Yeah.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
Go
go to the Good Humor Man.
Yeah.
Order a pecan crunch bar.
Yeah.
If the spots will not come out, he will say, I have no pecan crunch bars.
Yeah.
Then, order a fudgicle.
Yeah, fudgicle.
When you order the fudgicle,
yeah,
I will know that you will take the laundry with the spots.
All right, now listen.
Yes.
If the fudgicle melts onto my right trouser leg,
yeah,
it will be a sign that I need shirts next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday? But that is impossible.
It must be done.
Impossible.
Go quickly now. We haven't much time.
All right.
Smile. Very nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
Have a good time at the flower show.
I will. Give my best to everyone at the apiary.
Goodbye, madame.
Good evening. My name is Roger de Swans, and tonight, brought to you live from the stage of the Royal Stratford National Shakespeare Festival Company.
He hears knocking indeed. If a man were porter of Hellgate, he should have grown old turning the key. Knock, knock, knock. Who's there in the name of Beelzebub?
Hamlet.
Hamlet who?
Hamlet, Piglet's father. Let me in.
Knock, knock.
Who stands without?
Ophelia.
Ophelia who?
Ophelia on crotch for a change, you creep.
Knock, knock, knock.
Who beats his knuckled fist upon the gate?
Macbeth.
Macbeth who?
Macbeth, friends, winner, tell me.
Knock, knock.
Who stands there? Speak.
Romeo.
Ha! Perchance thou wouldst in jest propose to row me over in the clover. Ha ha, fie.
Knock, 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 knock.
Who thrusts his hand to gate so rhythmically?
Othello.
Othello? The dusky Moor?
No, Othello who could use a nice dry sack on the rocks with a twist, please.
Knock, knock.
Oh, protect me from another saucy wit. Who's there?
Caesar.
Caesar? But Caesar who?
Caesar and the Caesar and the pleaser and the Caesar.
Quality, value, style, service, selection, convenience, economy, savings, performance, experience, hospitality, low rates, friendly service, name brands, easy terms, affordable prices, money-back guarantee, free installation. Free admission, free appraisal, free alterations, free delivery, free estimates, free home trial, and free parking. No cash, no problem. No kidding. No fuss, no muss, no risk, no obligation, no red tape, no hidden charges, no down payment, no entry fee, no purchase necessary, no one will call on you, no payments or interest till December, and no parking. Limited time only, though, so act now, order today, send no money, offer good while supplies last, two to a customer, each item sold separately, batteries not included, mileage may vary. All sales are final. Allow 6 weeks for delivery. Some items not available. Some assembly required. Some restrictions may apply. Shop by mail. Order by phone. Try it in your home. Get one for your car. All entries become our property. Employees not eligible. Entry fees not refundable. Local restrictions apply. Void where prohibited, except in Indiana. So come on in. Come on in for a free demonstration and a free consultation with our friendly professional staff. Our courteous and knowledgeable sales representatives will help you make a selection that's just right for you and just right for your budget. And say, don't forget to pick up your free gift. A classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet pocket flashlight. And if you act now, we'll include an extra added free complimentary bonus gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet leather style wallet with detachable keychain and a pencil holder. It's our way of saying thank you. And if you're not completely satisfied, you pay nothing. Simply return the unused portion for a full refund. No questions asked. It's our way of saying thank you. Keep your free gift. Actually, it's our way of saying bend over just a little further and let us stick this big dick into your ass a little bit deeper. Well, you know, whenever you're exposed to advertising in this country, you realize all over again that America's leading industry is still the manufacture, distribution, packaging, and marketing of bullshit. High-quality bullshit. World-class designer bullshit, to be sure. Hospital-tested, clinically proven bullshit. But bullshit nonetheless. And it always amuses me that so many people seem to think that bullshit only comes from certain sources. You know, advertising, politicians, salesmen. Not true. Bullshit is everywhere. Bullshit is rampant. Parents are full of shit. Teachers are full of shit. Clergymen are full of shit. Law enforcement people are full of shit. The entire country is completely full of shit. In fact, this country was founded by a group of slave owners who told us that all men are created equal. That is what's known as being stunningly, stunningly full of shit. And you know, I think... And I think people show their ignorance when they say they want politicians to be honest. What are these people talking about? If honesty were suddenly introduced into politics, it would throw everything off. The whole system would collapse. And I think deep down the American people know that. The American people like their bullshit out front, where they can get a good, strong whiff of it. That's why they reelected Clinton. Listen. Clinton might be full of shit, but he lets you know it. Dole tried to hide it. I'm an honest man. Bullshit. Bullshit. People don't believe that shit. Clinton said, "Hi, I'm full of shit, and how do you like that?" And the people said, "At least he's honest. At least he's honest about being full of shit." It's like the business world. All businessmen are completely full of shit. Just the worst kind of people you could ever want to run into. Businessmen. And the proof of it is, they don't even trust each other. They don't trust each other. When a businessman is negotiating a deal, the first thing he does is to automatically assume that the other guy is a complete lying prick who's trying to fuck him on the deal. So he has to do everything he can to fuck the other guy a little bit harder and a little bit faster. And then, when it comes to dealing with customers, that's when you get the big smile. That's when you get the big smile. Businessman always has that big smile on his face as he carefully positions himself directly behind the customer and unzips his pants and services the account. We specialize in customer service. You heard that? Now you know what it means. Whoever coined the phrase, "let the buyer beware," was probably bleeding from the asshole. Then you have advertising. Advertising is the businessman's cheaply dressed $2 blowjob. Advertising sells you things you don't need and can't afford that are overpriced and don't work. And they do it by exploiting your fears and insecurities. And if you don't have any, they'll be glad to give you a few by showing you a nice picture of a woman with big tits. That's the essence of advertising. Big tits. Threateningly big tits. And speaking of big tits, what about show business? Show business, completely dishonest, corrupt, and full of shit.
but in a nice way. Plenty of expensive drugs and perverted sex. If you're going to be full of shit, might as well enjoy your work. Then you have the media. Not just the news media, let's include them all. The media are almost literally exploding with bullshit because they're located right at the crossroads of all the other bullshit. The media are made up of equal parts advertising, politics, business, public relations, and show business. These people are sitting right at Bullshit Junction. There's enough bullshit in the media for Texas to open a branch office. And you still have enough left over to start two law firms and a Christian bookstore. Because, folks, I gotta tell you, when it comes to bullshit, truly major league bullshit, you have to stand back in awe of the all-time heavyweight champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. Organized religion. It's no contest. Religion easily has the best bullshit story of all time. Think about it. Religion has convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a list of 10 specific things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these things, he will send you to a special place of burning and fire and smoke and torture and anguish for you to live forever and suffer and burn and scream until the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-present, all-knowing, and all-wise. Just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions and billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and somehow they always need money. You talk about a good bullshit story. If I may be permitted a small pun, holy shit! Holy shit!
Sorry, I need to keep you waiting here. I'm sorry. I was just repairing my playlist with Playlist Patch. It's an app you can get on your phone. I haven't figured it out how it works yet, so I don't usually do anything with it, but I just invented it, so if you want to buy it, let me know. The Emergency Ward, to start things out, was Cheech and Chong. Of course, you remember them, and they had a bunch of silly routines like this, and couldn't do a comedy show without including them, as well as the Frantics after that, who are from somewhere in Canada. I don't think it's Toronto. I don't think it's Montreal. I just don't know. I don't know why I mentioned it, so just forget I said anything about it. They're probably from Mississauga anyway. Anyway, that was the Frantics. They'll Go Mad. The Diet was, of course, Buddy Hackett. You remember Buddy Hackett? Sadly, gone. I think he's gone now. He left a while ago. And then a badly mixed compilation of Henny Youngman one-liners set to 45's Are Us kind of thing. Did you get that? I thought you would. Anyway, that was... and it was really badly done, and I had some hand in badly doing it, too. So let's all just be ashamed of ourselves and not let this happen again. Monty Python... from Matching Tie and Handkerchief. After that, The Mysterious Story of Ralph Mellish. And I think there's more to that than meets the eye. Nichols and May, after that. Mysterioso, a couple of spies in a Starbucks or something. And then Knock Knock, or Canuck Canuck, from the National Lampoon Radio Hour. giving us the Shakespearean treatment of Knock Knock, etc. But and then Bullshit from George Carlin. Nobody could spot Bullshit like George Carlin. And nobody could pile it all up and put it in your lap and make you laugh about it like George Carlin. So we're sad to see him gone. Anyway, I'm going to be gone in a couple of seconds, but I just wanted to remind you that if you have pledged to the marathon, you will be getting, if you have not already, you'll be getting some information on how to make good on your pledge. We would appreciate it if you do that with all post haste. And we want to keep this stuff going. I mean, it's like you know what I'm talking about. It's a unique product. We'd have no advertisers except for the ones we make up. And why am I pushing for Marathon now? The Marathon's over. But please check your things out. And alright, coming up, I got a tribute to probably the funniest guys in show business. One of them just turned 92. And the other will be 95 in June. As usual, I didn't write it down. But anyway, I will be back next week with apologies.
I'd like you to meet now a gentleman who I've had the pleasure of meeting and interviewing two or three times before, the 2,000-year-old man.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
How
are you? It's good to see you.
You know, many people still do not believe that you are 2,000 years old, but it has been authenticated.
Yes, it has, certainly.
You are that.
I have a birth certificate in the land of Og. I don't carry my birth certificate around.
Why?
Because it's a bolded, it's inscribed on
the bolded. I see, yes. Well,
that can't carry
would be
that.
Cumbersome.
No, credit cards, that's enough. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes. Are there any more secrets you're ready to divulge about why and how to live 2,000 years?
Well, one of the big things that's kept me rolling along singing a song is garlic.
Garlic has kept you alive? How can garlic keep you alive?
Well, garlic keeps you alive because, well, you know how you die, don't you? The scientific reason how you die is that the angel of death, see, rings your apartment bell and you let him in and bam, you know.
Comes
in and says, okay, Murray, this is it.
And so how does garlic help?
Usually comes at night, right?
Yes.
So before I retire, I'll eat myself a nice pound and a half of garlic. Then I lay down in bed, and I pull up my crazy quilt. And I'll starting to retire and snore.
And how does the garlic help?
Well, the angel of death, you know, comes in. He comes over to me, taps me on the shoulder. I say, who is it? And usually he goes, whoop! And he takes right off.
I
he's
see.
Out the door. That's...
Well, that's an interesting theory.
Sure. You know about the kiss of death, right?
Yes.
Sure, he's not going to kiss me. I'm full of garlic.
I see. Sir, what did you do 2,000 years ago to entertain each other?
I broke a wing.
Well, no, were there any?
Oh,
were there comedians?
Oh, sure.
Do you remember
so many,
any of them?
No.
2,000 years ago?
Primitive days. Let me see. I remember one comedian gave us some laugh. Boy, we were hysterical.
Who was he?
Gave us some good laugh. Murray the Nut.
What
yes.
did he do?
Oh, did he give us a laugh? A tiger came in the cave one afternoon, sauntered in, uninvited, naturally. Nobody asked for a tiger to walk in, I hear that. Tiger came in and Murray, you know, the joker, the tumbler, you know, the nut, he jumps up and he grabs the tiger by the tail and goes, and he went, yaha, yaha, yaha. And the tiger turned around and ate him up in a minute. And did we get hysterical? We were laughing, we laughed.
Well,
that was the best joke we ever had.
Well, sir, that's not very funny. That's
well,
rather...
what did we have, RKOs then? That's all we had.
Yeah, but, I mean, I would consider that...
That was the best we had. Murray took a tiger.
That was entertainment.
Yes.
But I would consider that in the realm of tragedy rather than comedy. How do you differentiate between tragedy...
It's your point of view. To me, tragedy, if it is... If I'll cut my finger, that's tragedy. It bleeds and I'll cry and I'll run around and I'll go into Mount Sinai for a day and a half. I'm very nervous about it. And to me, comedy is if you walk into an open sewer and die. What do I care? That's comedy.
I see. That's your definition.
My finger is important.
I see. You have seen many stage presentations in the 2,000 years since the Greeks. Sir, what is the best and most interesting stage play you ever saw?
Oh, it's the sense talking. Anthony and Cleopatra. Can't
Which
beat
one?
It. You can't beat
that's
it.
That's the one that Shakespeare wrote.
What wrote? No wrote. Life, real life. I walked up in Egypt there and there was Cleopatra and Anthony. We all took a look at them. That was the play.
That was the original cast.
Yes, the original cast, right. We saw that.
But that wasn't a play. You weren't allowed to.
We were allowed. They knew they were a hit. They let people see them kiss.
You they sold tickets to that?
Well, they didn't sell tickets. You put a few drachmas in the pot when you went in.
And really? And did you know Cleopatra?
Lovely woman.
How old? Was she really 21 when she died?
Get out of here, 21. What are you, a nut?
How old was she?
86, a nice age.
But why does history have it that she was 21?
History, they cook it up. She didn't die from an asp either.
What did she die?
No, sir. You know, with the snake, with that nonsense.
What was it?
A stroke. Not a stroke. They rushed her to the hospital pyramid, you know.
Yes.
And they pushed her around a little bit, and she said, "Well," and died.
That was a bad words.
Yeah.
You have been around a lot, sir. Medicine must intrigue you.
Yes, I happen to be a physician myself.
You were a doctor.
Oh, sorry, I was a doctor for over 100 years.
Well, why?
I liked that for a while.
Why did you?
I didn't know it would be popular again on TV. I would stuck with it. But, you know.
What did you have to know to be a doctor in those days?
The main thing you had to know was to say, "I think he's dead." You take a finger, put it in their nose, and if they didn't say, "Hey, you take your finger out of my nose," they're dead, right? That's how you find out.
Sir, you must have known many great men in your time. Many great men.
I knew the great and the near great.
Sir, did you know Rembrandt van Rijn?
We called him Rembrandt.
You knew him?
Yes. You know, Rembrandt was one of the first to use the roller.
What? How can you possibly? The roller, you mean the
roller? The little roller, yes.
Oh.
Only for the background. Rembrandt didn't eat much. You know, he used to, the money always went for paint. Occasional girl, and then paint. And paint, and paint, and then a girl, then paint, and a girl, then paint, and then for a long time, just girls.
How about Michelangelo? Did you ever
How about him?
Is that all you care to say about
him? Yeah, nice fella. Used to come in the store once in a while.
Michelangelo was one of your customers.
Oh, a big customer.
Did he ever pay you off in a piece of art?
No, I used to cuff him a lot.
What?
You know,
oh, you really?
Put him on a cuff,
Did you think of taking a piece of...
painters never had money.
Well, didn't you think of taking a piece of his art? It would be worth...
I thought it stunk. Who knew?
Why did you
I would
think
have gladly
that?
Taken it.
Why did you think that?
Of course, there's all people flying around, you know. It wasn't like a nice picture of somebody on a pony. It wasn't nice.
They were naked, too.
Yes, and they're naked. You can't hang a naked in your living room.
They do now.
Now they're modern and dirty. And then we were clean and cute.
Sir, have you ever been asked to spy?
I spied for Washington.
For our country?
Yes, for the father of our country, President George Washington. I not only was a spy for George, I was a counter spy.
What do you, I don't understand that.
Well, we had a little restaurant in Valley Forge. I worked the counter and listened. See? The counter spy, you know?
I see.
Every once in a while.
Who did you listen to?
A Hessian would come in under this, you know, and I'd listen. You could hear that. I knew it was a Hessian. Huh?
I see. And
I would tell George, a Hessian. Come out. They give him a smack in the head, and that's it, you know?
You were very close to the whole revolution, weren't you?
Yes.
Did you know Benedict Arnold?
I knew him and I despised him.
Because he was a traitor?
No, because he told me... he told me he was going to meet me that night and I had a date.
Did you know he was a traitor?
The same night he was supposed to bring a girl for me, he goes and betrays his country.
That's terrible. Sir, you have... Do you know the origin of some of our sports? Are you interested in sports at all?
Well, tennis is a heck of a game.
When did tennis first start? In England, didn't it?
No, way before England. Tennis started in Egypt.
How did it... Did somebody invent it?
No.
Or was it accidental?
In Egypt then, there used to be skunks. Skunk would walk around near your pyramid. You take a stick, bang, it hit him away, right?
Yes.
Have to hit him next to somebody else's pyramid. You don't want a skunk. Bang, it hits him back to you. Well, you give the skunk, bang, another shot. Bang, bang, bang. That was tennis.
I see. People used to sit and watch that.
Right. Then you jump over the skunk and shake hands. You know,
I see.
The ones finally where it finally
just a moment,
ends up.
How did they get the term racket? Why did they call it a tennis racket?
Oh, that came because of Egypt. They used catgut. Cats. There were many cats in Egypt. See, that's where they get the term racket.
How?
Well, when you start taking the guts out of a cat, that's some racket, baby. You want to hear a racket?
Yes.
I good.
See.
They don't give you their guts so easily, you know. That's where the term racket.
Yeah, I see. Sir, you have vacationed, I guess, all over the world.
Yes, I love vacations. I love to take a nice holiday.
Favorite resort of all?
Europe. I keep a locker in Europe.
What advice would you give to the youth of the world to make this a peaceful, happy world?
Well, I would say to the children of the world, listen to your mother and your father. Listen to your grandmother and your grandfather. Listen to an aunt, to an uncle. Listen to a smart niece. Listen to a good-looking cousin. And mainly, listen to your heart. And listen to your watch. Listen to your fountain pen. Listen to your inkwell. But never, never, ever listen to a fellow come over to you with pointy teeth. You know why? Because that's Dracula. And I don't want you to listen to him. He's no good. Now, goodbye and good luck.